I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
This is Jay Horowitz with a special edition of Amazing Conversation with my friend of this June to be 43 years now, Daryl Strawberry. We're getting old.
Yeah, amazing conversation. We are getting old.
We first met June of 1980.
1980, remember that? Dodger Stadium.
Yeah, I met your lovely mother, Ruby.
Yeah.
God, it seems like. And Joe Torre was there, my first manager. Every time I see Joe, he says, "You always got me fired." But you had pretty good success. How many? You had all four with the Yankees, right? World Series?
Three. I had one here.
That's right. It was three and one with the Yankees. Yeah. So let me ask you, I've been here a long time. For me, with the draft coming up this July 9th to 11th, nobody came drafted with more pressure than you. Our number one pick in 1980, the black Ted Williams on the cover of Sports Illustrated. Do you remember what kind of expectations you had when you found out you were number one draft pick?
Yeah, I know the expectations were high. I was going to either be the first pick or the third pick,
right,
which they picked Billy Beane with. And
he was a quarterback, right? He was thinking of going to Stanford.
He was going to Stanford,
yeah.
And they were talking about maybe him being the first pick, and they said they didn't think I'd be left for the second pick, and they picked him number three. So I was in class, and it was just a great day. I mean, I had a great baseball season, high school season. It was time to move on, and I wanted to see what was next for me. Just remembering all the players that I played with the year before when I was a junior in high school. We went to the city championship 1979, and we played at Dodger Stadium, and we lost to John Elway and them. They beat us in the city championship that year at Dodger Stadium. And four different players got drafted off my team, and I thought that was pretty cool, and I thought maybe I might have a chance to be drafted my senior year, and there was. As we went forward, the season began in high school, and I just remember all the scouts there. And I remember the scout for the Mets was Roger.
Youngwood, right.
Yeah, and Harry Minor.
Right, passed
away a couple of years. Yeah, those were wonderful guys, and they followed me that whole senior year. And they were telling me they were thinking about picking me. Number one, they got the first pick, and there I was being compared to called the Black Ted Williams. I was like, well, who is Ted Williams?
Yeah.
I followed baseball, but I only knew the Dodgers because I grew up in L.A. and knew the Cincinnati Reds.
I think they asked you a million times. Your name was Daryl Smith. Do you think all the hubbub would have happened? I mean, how much part do you think your name played into it?
I think my name had a big part to do with it. But I think what stood out the most was being 6'6". I think that was a big frame. You know, which most scouts say they look at an athlete when they're young. And they look at him as when he fills out, what will he be like? And I think that's what was looked at for me. You know, they were looking at the size I was and can run and play the outfield. And I pitched a little bit too. But I think they really recognized that I could hit the ball too. And I was in high school, I was hitting the ball a long ways, you know, with the aluminum bats. You think about that if they had it in major leagues, what kind of hitter players could be. But
even the more pressure, when you were drafted, we were a bad team in 80. I mean, right away, you're going to be the savior. You know, we were in the World Series in 73, and the years weren't great after that. I mean, do you feel the added expectation of being a savior of an organization when you got picked?
No, I really didn't. I think the important things that I was thinking about when I was young was to really develop and try to get to the player that I believed that I could be. I know the team was bad. I remember in 83 going to spring training, and I remember George being the manager. And I remember him playing me in some of the A games, and I had some success. And I just thought it was really cool that they gave me an opportunity to play. I didn't know if I was going to make the team coming out of spring training. I think they wanted to take me, but I think Frank didn't want to do that. He thought I was a little bit too young to probably be coming here and playing. And having those type of expectations to carry a team and in New York City. This is a big city. And when the expectations are high on you in a big city, fans are going to expect you to produce. And it's challenging for young athletes to be able to come here and think, you know, they could just walk in and produce. And I didn't just walk in and produce right away. I came after a month of the season. I think I came in May, up in May. And the season was already started, and I had to come in and try to play. And the expectations were great, and the fans were starting to come. And I got off to a really rough start.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
What would you tell the young guys? You know, we have a lot of veterans on our team, but also we have also young guys like Mauricio, Vientos, Beatty, Alvarez. You know, some of them are doing good, some of them struggle. What would you, you know, you struggled. If you had them in a room here today, what would you tell those young guys of trying to make it in New York?
I would tell them, keep coming to the ballpark early every day and keep working. And I would tell them, don't work on what you're strong at, work on what you're weak at. And why I say that is because that's what Jim Fry did with me. He knew I would eventually turn around and become the hitter that I was supposed to be at that level. But he made me come to the ballpark to understand working on all parts of your game is going to make a difference of how long you're going to stay here and how much success you're going to have here. So I would tell those young players, don't just focus on and think it's all about hitting. It's all about your all-around play to develop your play of the kind of player you want to be. And if you do that, you're going to be able to climb the ladder and achieve great things. It doesn't mean it's all going to happen in your first year, your second year. You can have some good years in the big leagues, but you're going to also have some hard times, you know, because it catches up to everybody. Everybody struggles. And the thing about it is, if you work hard and you go through some struggles, you'll be prepared because you continue to work hard.
Especially in New York, right? Everything, this is Pittsburgh, no offense to Pittsburgh, but if Beatty go, the other day he made an error and, you know, of course, was part of the loss. It's 100% more magnified in New York than in other places, right?
Well, of course it is. I mean, it's the spotlight, but it's part of it. It's part of playing in a big city. You're going to make mistakes, and can you handle the pressure? And that's what young players have to learn. It's a lot of pressure here. The fans are going to get on you, but it's not personal. I never took it personal when the fans booed me. When they were booing me, I took it as I need to play better. And I realized that they saw the talent that I had and they wanted me to play better. And I understood that. And I think that's what guys have to learn about.
I mean, you
took
on fans in Boston, specifically, I remember. You know, the chance, it would be waving up and down, Daryl.
That's a different animal there, you know, when we go.
But it's part of the same thing, no?
I mean, part of the same thing. And I didn't make a big thing out of it. Everybody else was making a big thing out of it. They said, well, what do you think about the fans chanting your name like that? I said, well, at least they know I'm in the ballpark. You know, that's the way I kind of looked at it. I think some players take that personal, and I really don't feel that way about fans. I've always felt like they're part of what we're doing. And when you go on the road, fans should boo you because to me it always meant if they're booing you, that means you're good.
Yeah.
If they're not saying nothing about you, then oh well.
When we brought you up in May, early May of '83, I mean, again, we were a bad team again. And I always felt that, you know, that one of the mistakes I made, it opened you up to every interview, you were going to be the savior, you know, in the Mets. And how hard was that, you know, to expect you to hit a home run every time out, you know, to do, you know, and it's a little bit better. Keith got here, right? It took a little bit of the pressure off.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it was that hard, you know, to be able to overcome that. I think that was part of the learning curve for me. I needed to learn that. I needed to learn that if I was going to play at the highest level, at the major league level, they expect me to do well. And I expected myself to do well, too. Once I got going, there's no doubt about it. Like I said, it's a up and down roller coaster ride that players go on. But I just didn't want to stay on the down. I wanted to stay on the upside. And for me to stay on the upside, that means I got to believe in myself. And I can't let all the noise that's going on around me be a distraction. I think if you start getting consumed with that, it becomes a major distraction for you. And you start thinking about too many other things. You start putting more pressure on yourself. So I learned playing here that when I ran out on the field at Shea Stadium, that I would not put pressure on myself to play. I would just play.
Carol, another thing that happens in July is the All-Star game. 84 was your first All-Star game. Do you have any memories of the first game and how you felt when they told you you were selected and starting and stuff like that later on?
It was like a big dream. You know, when you think about it, and I watched baseball for so long growing up, and baseball has always been my favorite sport. But it was a major dream to me to be able to know that I was going to the All-Star game in 84. I had watched so many All-Star games.
That was Houston, right, if my memory – that was Doc pitching that game?
That was Doc pitching that game, yeah. I had so many great memories of just watching baseball and seeing the All-Star game and realizing that one day I wanted to be there. When I was a kid growing up, I was always watching baseball, and I was always thrilled about Major League Baseball, and I was always thrilled about the All-Star game and seeing that classic in the middle of the season and say one day, you know, I want to play in this and I want to be a part of this.
And you remember who told you you made the team? Was it Davey, or probably it was Davey? No, I mean.
No, I think it was you, wasn't it?
It was me. I mean,
you were a big part of all of what we were. When you think about it and you look back over, Jay, you were the PR for us, and you handled all the situations, and you knew about the All-Star games, and you knew who was making it, and who.
Yeah, we had a good with Gary and Keith, and yeah.
And Sid, wasn't Sid?
Sid
made it.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
For a couple of years, you were really not involved with the Mets. You were, you know, how does it feel with the new ownership that, you know, the Cohns have reached out to you, Steve and his wife Alex, made you feel welcome, that they helped you with your ministry charities. How does it feel like you're kind of like back in the family again?
Well, I just want to be, you know, always remind people I'm very thankful for Steve and Alex and what they have done and how the organization is taking a different turn from, you know, what it used to be and taking a direction of looking at the history of the Mets. Because I like we're telling the fans today, you know, the history of the New York Mets, they had some really pretty good players here. And some guys that did some great things, and some guys that were able to accomplish a whole lot. And for me to be here 8 years and be on the 7-time All-Star and win a championship and Rookie of the Year and be a part of, you know, the success each year of the teams we had was exciting for me. It was exciting for the fans because it was the fans, the ones that poured out to see us play. And now you have the owners, you know, that are taking the front step of bringing the players back that meant so much to the fans here. And I think it means a lot to all of us to receive that and the support, you know, I got from my golf outing of the Mets, you know, donating things and helping me with that has really been a blessing.
I mean, your life is an open book. I mean, everybody knows your life. Is it 20 years you've alcohol free?
Yes.
This June we had a great tournament, raised money for the Strawberry Ministry. You were Tracy Ministers, 15, 16, 17 guys from the 86. You know, Bertie Williams was there. Gary Sheffield. What did it make you feel like to be part of something like that? You know, let me simply say the question I always get sometimes: don't you think Strawberry Goodin should be in the Hall of Fame? My response is, maybe, maybe not. But what these guys are doing now today, especially you, is better than the Hall of Fame. You're affecting people's lives, making things better, trying to help a kid with an addiction. This is what life is all about.
Yeah, I mean, life has more to it than just to say, look at me. I was a great baseball player and put on a uniform and excelled and achieved all these great things. You know, had I not got derailed, you know, my life would have been different for us at the baseball standpoint. But from the life of who I am today and the man that I am today, I get to do some really cool things. I get to stand on some really incredible platforms and really help a lot of people.
Speaking of that, you told me today, a week or two you're going to go to a maximum security prison in Pennsylvania, right?
Yes.
To speak to convicts there.
July 13th, 14th, yeah. I'll be in the maximum security prison.
That's just like the first time you've done that.
No, I do a lot of those up in Pennsylvania, right by Penn State. It's right next to Penn State, actually. And it's a big prison, and I saw it one time when I was up there doing some ministry work. And I said one day to myself, I'm going to go into that prison and minister to the guys, the inmates in there. So I'm headed there this year. I finally got that door open where the chaplain got out, found out I wanted to speak there, and he reached out to me, and it finally worked out. And so I'm excited about it. I'm always excited about it when I go behind the gates like that, and inmates, 2,500, 2,800 inmates on the ground. And I get to go there. The wardens, they let me come in, and they just freely let me bring hope.
Out of the 365 days, how many days do you think you're on the road for?
Probably about 260 right. or 70 times out of the year. So my wife really loves me. So she loves me when I come home. So it's a good thing. And people say, well, how does it work in your life day to day? Well, first of all, we're not kids. You know, I'm 61. So we're a lot older now and more mature.
Two-time cancer survivor.
Two-time cancer survivor. And we have a lot of work to do. My wife is very busy. 24/7, she works at the church and she's always helping somebody. And I'm on the road, I'm always helping somebody. So it's a busy life, just like it was a baseball life, and traveling and playing baseball. But this is like this, and bringing fans together, bringing people together to cheer you on. This time I'm winning souls, help people change their situations because the circumstances of people's lives. Could be devastated, and they don't believe they can get out of it.
Remember what time I interviewed you in prison one time?
You did, Jay. You came. I was totally shocked that you would actually come visit me like that. And that's what I love about you. You was always special, well, you know, to me, and not only me, but you was always special to all the guys of us that played here.
The 86 team was special. You know, it was such a bunch of characters and personalities and. You know, maybe because I was just out of college and I bonded with the guys or something. Not just because we won.
No, I
but
know.
The way we won. The other teams hated us. We got to a million fights. Yeah. Mike Tyson loved us because we got to a lot of fights.
Yeah, he did yeah. like us. He wanted to come see us, and he came to Shane to visit me and Doc before he was a heavyweight champion.
Well, listen, I enjoy hearing you speak. I treasure our friendship, and you've really done great, Straw. You've really done great.
Well, thank you, Jay. I treasure our friendship, too, forever.
And thank you for your time, my friend.
Thank you. Always, Jay.
Always, man. Yeah. Thanks, man.